Hey there, everybody, and welcome to episode 234 of the weekly Google Cloud Platform podcast. As always, I'm Mark Merchandani, but I'm here with a very special guest host, Carter Morgan. Hey, Carter, how you doing?
You know, I'm doing as well as anyone can possibly be right now, Mark.
You know, that's like the answer we get every week, and these are strange times, but I am super, super glad to have you here, and it's always exciting for us to work together.
Always. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And of course, we have a fantastic episode today, all around one specific content. And I'm going to go ahead and say that people are probably going to be able to guess what that is. But why don't you tell us who's coming in today?
Well, today we've got Alex and Drew from the GKE team, and they're going to talk about GKE, which just turned 5.
Yeah.
I know. I'm excited. Here's why I'm excited. I was working with Kubernetes a long time ago, back when it was like 1.3, you know. And now it's at like 1.19. So there's probably so much that has changed in that time. I'm curious to hear what.
Absolutely. And of course, Alex and Drew come in with a bunch of cool information about GKE, what it's been doing, how people can use it, and then what's going to be coming up in the future. So it's a fantastic talk. Can't wait to get to that. But before we do that, why don't we go ahead and jump into our cool things of the week?
Yes. Well, I mean, since Kubernetes is the theme, why don't we keep it going? You know, Kubernetes is really cool. One of the big features is how it does networking, right? So you can always find services that come up or deployments through this service interface. And then also at a higher level, L7 networking, there's ingress to route traffic. The thing is, as your workload grows, you need policies around security. Or if you have workloads that are on-prem and not, how do you handle all that? And so you have to start caring about things like security, visibility, scalability. And a lot of this has had to be done manually. And so needed some kind of interface to be able to do this programmatically. That's where Cilium, which is the most mature eBPF implementation for Kubernetes, that's where that comes in. eBPF is a technology that lets you run sandbox programs in the Linux kernel without having to recompile them. So what that means is you can actively reprogram runtime behavior on the fly without having to compromise, you know, efficiency or safety. And so for a practical example of why this is, I think, very cool, is a lot of times you have to make what are called policies to declare how a pod can communicate, what can talk to what. But there hasn't been a scalable way to troubleshoot that until now. And so with eBPF on GKE, you can support real-time policy enforcement as a way to make sure that the right things are talking to the right things. And so if you want to know more details about that, if anyone listening, check out the show notes to go a little bit beyond my hand waving. This is pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds awesome. And I think it's just another great example of all the stuff that's being built around Kubernetes, right? Kubernetes is great, but the ecosystem around it, there's just so many things going on there. So it is super exciting to hear that. And of course, I know we said that Kubernetes was the theme, but I'm going to break it and talk about week 8 of Google Cloud Next, which this week is about cloud AI. So everything you can think about AI, ML, and all sorts of things. But I do want to call out one specific talk. We'll have a link in the show notes for it with our friend Sarah Robinson talking about explainable AI. And I've been hearing this more and more lately, right? This idea of, oh, hey, we have something that's making a prediction, but how did it make that prediction? And how can you make sure that it's not biased, right? These are really big topics today. So there's a lot of cool talks. Definitely go check them out. And then of course, you know, Sarah Robinson's talk is going to be awesome. So super excited to see that.
Everything Sarah Robinson does is amazing. I'm like, I feel lucky. I'm like, I worked with her once about 4 years ago, and I'm still telling people about it.
There are some amazing people here, and it's just so great when we do get a chance to work with them on whatever project brings us together. Speaking of which, Carter, you've been working on a podcast project yourself, right?
Yes, yes. I've been working on a... Should I just say it?
Yeah, just go for it.
I've been working on this new podcast called How I Launched This, a SaaS Story from Google Cloud. And basically what we're doing every week is we're talking to SaaS leaders about trends in the industry, how they went from starting out their company to becoming an industry leader, the hurdles they overcame. And a lot of times they have anecdotes or stories or just a different perspective. And so if that's something you're interested in, definitely check out that podcast, which the link is bit.ly, How I Launched This.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll have that in the show notes as well. And that's being done with our friend Stephanie Wong, right?
Yes. And Stephanie Wong is amazing as well. If you all have seen the Google Data Center video, she was the host on that and the person that put that together. So she is the co-host on this podcast, and I'm just lucky to get to work with her as well.
Absolutely. So make sure to check that out if you're interested. And of course, SaaS companies are super cool, right? We're seeing them all over the place. So it is cool to hear how they kind of came to be and the things they have to think about. Well, with all the cool things out of the way, why don't we go ahead and jump into our interview with Alex and Drew?
Yes.
Alex and Drew, thanks so much for joining us. To get things started, can you tell us a little more about yourselves?
Hi, I'm Alex Zakhanov. I'm a director of engineering for Google Kubernetes Engine. product. And my experience is kind of mixed between startups and building high-scale services. And I still have kind of all the scars from my startups of when I didn't listen to my customers. So kind of trying to apply it today.
And hi, everyone. I'm Drew Bradsock. I lead product for GKE, based up in Toronto, Canada, or sometimes referred to as Waterloo, where the actual Google office is. And super excited to talk about GKE today.
And of course, just like you said, Drew, we're here to talk about GKE, or Google Kubernetes Engine. And so the first question is, why are we talking about GKE right now? What certain event has happened?
It is actually our fifth birthday. And Alex and I were fortunate enough to talk about the birthday with no cake. It was very much a virtual cake at Cloud Next, but it's really hard to believe that it's already been 5 years since GKE came out. Kubernetes is 6 years, but very soon after it was made open source by Google, we brought our own managed offering out, and we've already gotten to the point where we're a toddler, would be the best way to look at it.
And kind of for me, kind of it was really interesting to reflect on that birthday, because from one side, kind of it's a point of maturity. At the same time, a big realization that Kubernetes and GKE is still really young, really vibrant, fast-evolving technology really helps our customers today.
Yeah, so I think a good question then, because it's come up a few times, what is Kubernetes? Like, if we could give a little short description of it, what is this tool everyone's talking about?
So I think to me, Kubernetes is a way to manage your containers at scale. And this is something that you can manage across any workloads. Some people actually view it as the data center or the operating system of the data center. We're beginning to take what used to have to be bespoke and managed by actual customers. Instead, Kubernetes allows you to do it in a scalable way. But what makes it really special is its open source nature. This isn't something from just one provider or one vendor. This really pulls on a massive community of people, which to Alex's earlier point has allowed us to iterate really, really quickly to constantly improve Kubernetes and adapt to new workloads. A little bit longer than a short answer, but I think Kubernetes is one of those things where whoever you ask, you're going to get a slightly different answer, but that's my hot take.
Yeah, and kind of building on what Drew said, for me, Kubernetes is a cloud on your terms. What Kubernetes have done is really redefined what it means to develop cloud-native applications in an efficient way and how to do it in a cloud-agnostic way. So you get ultimate flexibility between all clouds.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a hot technology that tons of people have been talking about. And Drew, I like what you said about, you know, you'll get a different answer each time, because at the end of the day, it's a little hard to grasp, especially for people who aren't born into the cloud native world. But that being said, you know, Kubernetes is a technology. You probably can't get away from it right now in terms of people talking about it. But also there's this Google Kubernetes Engine. So what's the difference?
The way to look at it is that Kubernetes is inherently open source, so anyone can deploy it anywhere. And one of the cool things about this is very much like English. I'm Canadian. Eventually, I'm going to bring up the fact you spell color with a U and everyone else is spelling it wrong. But English is fairly consistent, but there are slight differences between it. I think Kubernetes itself is very much the same way, right? Where multiple different vendors, as well as people spinning their own, have Kubernetes, but it's slightly different in how it's deployed. What makes Google Kubernetes Engine different is that we've really gone hard at simplifying the complexity of Kubernetes, amongst other things. And Alex and I will definitely go through a few of those. But it's taken what could be very complex. I think for those of you who are listening who have tried to deploy on a bare metal or even built bravely a Raspberry Pi cluster and get it deployed, which I've not done yet. I've definitely done my own clusters, but no home Raspberry Pi clusters. But it's taking that complexity and making it a lot easier. And secondly, taking a lot of the learnings we've had from Borg, like our internal container management system, and all the years of taking the best of Google and actually bringing that into Kubernetes so it's faster, it scales easier, and uses a lot of our own learnings to make it a much smoother system for customers.
Yeah, kind of, and a key thing is, like, if you think kind of Kubernetes sets the standard, with GKE actually providing implementation of that standard, really pushing the boundary for our customers, pushing how far you can scale the clusters, pushing how efficiently you can run, pushing how fast you can scale to meet peak demands. And that's kind of all the secret sauce that comes with the GKE. Really kind of taking advantage of our platform and our learnings from a Borg and bringing it to our customers.
On the platform side, we've also made use of a lot of GCP technology, right? If you look at the different ways people deploy Kubernetes, especially on bare metal or on their own data centers, they have to do a vanilla and really figure out everything on their own. What has made GKE really fast and a lot easier for people to work with and get going on is that we're already integrated into GCP networking and storage and compute. And a lot of the optimizations are done for the customers, so they don't have to worry about all the fine tuning or getting it to work. Because even spinning up a cluster, the huge amount of effort underneath the covers is actually done by Google versus the customers having to stitch everything together. That's why, like, when members join Alex's team or mine, we actually get them to build a cluster from scratch just to be able to appreciate how much work needs to be done under the covers.
Wow. So it sounds like GKE provides like sane defaults and then a lot of almost like an interface in between all of that for users and customers so that they can grow and scale.
Yep, exactly the point. And the key thing here is not just defaults to start on your day one, but really defaults to build your production clusters at scale, because that's where complexity is. Like spinning off kind of a first Kubernetes cluster, it's easy. Getting your at scale production environment, that's hard. And that's where we invest from a security angle, from a scalability angle, from a reliability angle. And that's where kind of we use kind of our all learnings from running that at scale.
And I think on that, one of the challenges we've had, which is thankfully not giving me an ulcer yet in my team, but we have to range from really small startups, say someone just spinning up their first app that wants it to scale, right? So they want something that's going to scale across the nation or globally or be able to handle peak workload, but they're new. They're just embracing Kubernetes. They want to get going, but they want to be quite cost conscious. And the flip side, we're working with Twitter. They actually did a cool Next on Air talk about this, where we have to be able to handle the workloads that Twitter is handling worldwide. And with the state of the world these days, that's immense. So you need to balance that ability just to scale up continually and not go down, because we've got this internal mantra, we don't want to be part of a fail whale, right? And not have any repercussions there. But then we also have to make it quite easy for startups. And it's that bridging the two that has made GK pretty unique out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome to hear. And I think that I really liked your anecdote earlier. And actually, I guess it wasn't an anecdote. You just said, when people join your team, you kind of say, hey, go set up a Kubernetes cluster. Because two things that I know about Kubernetes, I'm not very good at Kubernetes, but A, it's hard, right? It is a lot to learn. And then B, scaling up and managing that. And like you said, Alex, in a big production environment, there's a lot of work involved there. So it sounds like GKE is a good solution to kind of run this in production, especially as you grow to, you know, maybe Twitter scale, if you're lucky, and have to deal with that much work going on in Kubernetes. GKE is turning 5 now, right? So that means there's been 5 years of us releasing this, of us letting people work on it. What's new with GKE turning 5?
With GKE turning 5, there are a number of key areas where we continue to push an envelope. And GKE is still young technology. There is still a lot of innovation happening in the space. And first, the most important thing is still reliability. And what's interesting is that reliability, when everything is static, is a relatively easy problem to solve. When you're trying to combine reliability with a high velocity for customers, it's a really interesting and tough problem. And that's why customers love Kubernetes. That's why customers love GKE, because they can get that velocity of innovation combined with the reliability. So we put a lot of effort to make it simple for customers. We recently introduced release channels in production that allows customers to tell us their kind of tolerance to disruptions. For example, if you want to be on the cutting edge, you can run on a rapid channel and you will get access to the latest Kubernetes as soon as it's released. Or kind of if you need to have really high reliability and really kind of a battle-proven bits, you can pick stable channel and enjoy all at scale testing that we do across all clusters that we run. And if you are somewhere in between, kind of regular channel is right for you.
One of the cool things that we've actually seen is that traditional customers like banks are actually contributing back to Kubernetes, and they want to be able to leverage what they've contributed into the releases when they come out, and they're using Rapid. Right. So they're actually saying, hey, we need this. This is how we want to grow. We're giving back. They can embrace Rapid. But for something like their payment system, that, as Alex mentioned, they want that stability. So it allows them to bridge a lot safely and still be able to take advantage of the bleeding edge tech and really contribute to where Kubernetes is going.
What's more interesting is that reliability is the foundation for everything. I'll say kind of a reliability and security. But what's really happening right now is that customers continue to push boundaries of GKE and the boundaries of Kubernetes. We see kind of, we just worked with some of our customers to announce scaling to 15,000 nodes. And it's not an abstract requirement. It actually solves real problems for customers that need to do artificial intelligence, machine learning, and before they needed to wait for days and months, which is now can be done in hours. And like a perfect example is our work with Bayer's, where we actually were able to process 15 billion genomes for them within an hour, based on 15,000 node cluster with roughly 240,000 nodes and 1.5 petabytes of memory. Even when I just talk about that numbers, like it drives me crazy.
And I think the finance people thinking about that are going a little crazy too, because like, yeah, I don't want to think of what the requisition was for that much RAM and handling that, right? So
it's all scale up, scale down, right?
Exactly.
And that's a game changer, I think, being able to do these massive batch jobs, be able to do this degree of analysis, and then just wind it down when you don't need it is critical, because a lot of these ML workloads, this is where Kubernetes has been great, they scale up massively. They have to do a lot of processing, because the more power you can throw out, the shorter they are. You shut it down, you iterate and bring it back up. So they can actually really control their costs, and the larger cluster size, and that was what was cool with Bear, they could iterate a lot faster, adjust and run it again, adjust and run it again. So it wasn't just the size of the cluster, which was super cool for Alex's team and mine, but it's the speed at which they could actually play around with their ML jobs.
Actually, it's like talking about the cost, what was super cool in that example, that they were actually able to use preemptible VMs, giving them a 5x saving on the cost, at the same time still run their jobs reliably, which is a kind of a huge kudos to all reliability infrastructure that we have in Kubernetes and GKE. So we can manage all disruptions that come in from preemptible VMs not being constantly available.
That's absolutely mind-blowing, just the scale and the cost savings that you're talking about there. And so with 15,000 nodes being something new with GKE turning 5, what about the other technology or components that make that happen? Like, you know, auto-scaling you mentioned, or with networking, you've got to be able to handle networking to that many nodes. So does GKE 5 have anything new in those areas?
Yeah. Absolutely. And kind of the unique thing about kind of scaling GKE, that it's not just about the nodes. Nodes is top of the iceberg, because in reality, it's all about workloads and what services, what endpoints those workloads use, what storage, what memory requirements. So you're really dealing with a multidimensional problem here as you're scaling workloads and you have to think about your network scalability, your ingress scalability, your cross-cluster traffic. For example, kind of we have a lot of investments around multi-cluster ingress, about providing multi-cluster services and connectivity between clusters. So all that kind of related to really pushing the boundaries and helping customers to scale. And a key thing, like what I love just about the culture of the team, that from a day one, the team always co-innovated with customers. Like we never did that alone. Every new feature that we ship, we start with design partners. We partner with them, we understand their problems, they co-innovate with us, they contribute back. And when we actually ship something, it solves a real problem, we learn from each other.
One of the fun things about this was that we broke a lot of stuff. And what I mean by that is as we went towards that 15,000K, and this is heavily led for our team out in Warsaw, was we just kept on running into limits. And they'd be running their testing, we'd break. And they'd fix one thing and they'd run another piece of that multidimensional scaling and break again. And they just kept on running into it. So they fixed a lot of components of this, both with some in open source, right, to make sure we're improving Kubernetes for everyone. But a lot of it was optimizing with other bits of GCP to be able to expand those limits. So it wasn't an easy journey. I think it was very much a step function improvements as we hit each new limit as part of that.
But those are exactly customer use cases, right? And like you said, it's great to get the solutions from those. Fold the open source ones into Kubernetes, right? So everyone can benefit from them. But then fold the engineering specific ones in the managed Kubernetes offering that is GKE. And then all the customers can kind of get the benefits of that without having to, you know, probably step through the Kubernetes source code and understand what those actual changes were. One of the other launches from the previous couple of weeks was game servers. And that's all running on GKE as well, right?
Yeah, that one was actually awesome. So as a gamer myself, it's been pretty cool seeing some of the partners that we've got going on it. It was really about allowing game companies to be able to scale quickly. So that the game server team worked heavily with the GKE group and many other bits of GCP. But I think what's been cool about this is that tech and GKE's ability to scale globally, right? Just add another region, with ease, add up zones, be able to scale up, has helped a lot of different game companies recently. So this has been a big focus area for us because we are in the middle of a pandemic globally. And because of that, we've played a lot of games, probably more than I should, considering I have two kids. I should be parenting instead. Hopefully no one's judging. And the game companies, they've reached demand levels they never expected, right? Especially some of these pocket games that caught on have really grown up quite quickly. And to be able to handle that scale, Kubernetes and GK in particular has been really good because as the game sort of peaks, it goes back down and they're not paying for it anymore, right? It allows them actually, as it ebbs and flows, to the point where some companies, like we've got a really great ad tech partner, OpenX, their workloads, it's on the ad side, actually flows globally. So they use the scaling to go up and down and almost a fall the sun moment throughout the entire day. And game companies do the same way. As people wake up or very late for some gamers on the East Coast, it'll start peaking up, goes back down, and same the other zones come up a West Coast and it falls all the way globally, which is super cool to see as we actually look at the CPU patterns and usage patterns with these clients.
And with gaming companies, kind of what I love to observe right now is that it seems that there is certain kind of a de facto standard showing up with GK and Spanner, where kind of more and more gaming companies start using exactly the same design pattern, which is kind of a good indication that it works, kind of like real pleasure. For us, kind of, we do pay a lot of attention to gaming scenarios. As Drew mentioned, fast scale up and scale down is critical for them, for those companies. And all our investments that go in auto-scaling, and that includes our vertical auto-scaling for ports, our horizontal auto-scaling, as well as our node auto-scaling. Gaming companies really push the limits on all of them. And it's not just about when to auto-scale, it's how fast you can do that, how well you handle that rapid growth, kind of that burst traffic, and scale down later to save the cost.
Yeah, and OpenX actually did a next talk on that specifically. So I'll make sure to include that in the show notes for people who are interested, because it's a great talk that goes over exactly how they were thinking about those types of problems and how they solve them with Kubernetes.
As a gamer, I definitely want to go check that out. So I'm going to be looking in the show notes for that. I had a question about multi-clusters, and I'm sure that these clusters don't always have to be in the same cloud provider, or some can maybe be on-prem or something like that. And with Anthos, I'm curious how GKE and Anthos are differentiated.
Yeah, one way to look at this is that Anthos really brings GKE everywhere, right? The core of Anthos is to allow customers to be able to deploy, develop, manage the exact same way on-prem as on GCP, as on other clouds. So if you wanted to get going and actually move from, let's say, your VM environments with a lot of your apps, begin that containerization journey, that modernization step, many clients don't want to leap straight to the cloud because it's a big transition. They have things working on VMs, security policies work, storage policies work, audit, compliance, everything works. May not be perfect, right? But it actually works and it's stable and it's not much work to deploy the new version. But eventually, just like anything, you've got to make that transition. But leaping straight from, hey, I've got a monolithic VM app into containers in the cloud, that can be really daunting. What Anthos has allowed clients to do is actually be able to move to Kubernetes in a controlled environment, right? Something that is leveraging Google's best practices as well as using service meshes and config policies. Do it where it's all stitched together. Because as we mentioned earlier, deploying your own clusters is really hard. Doing it for global companies is even harder on bare metal. We do this for them. And what's cool about this is they've made that investment. Let's say you can't leave data. I'm Canadian, as I mentioned. So often the data can't leave the country. Anthos is a great way to have it local or even contain within your own environment. But then as you grow and move into the cloud, you don't have to redo everything. You can use the same CI. You can use the same CD. You can use the same policy frameworks. What's awesome about GKE and deploying Azure, using the best practices of the tech they have there, you can do it. And once again, you're not having to start fresh with all your deployment mechanisms because ultimately developers shouldn't care, right? We all say that. It's a pretty lofty goal to get to the point where they don't need to know if it's on-prem or in the cloud, but that's the goal of a lot of customers of what they're doing. And even to the point where they can use their on-prem and burst into the cloud, that's really a goal for a lot of the clients where they can handle the peak workloads in the cloud, but keep that regular commitment on-prem until they can eventually transition. So from a GK point of view, we want it consistent. And that's a cool thing. Like on other environments, and we've got it available on AWS now, it's GK. When you're using it on-prem with Anthos, it's GK. But it's part of Anthos. Anthos is that overall offering, but the GK is consistent everywhere.
For me, kind of Ansys is a really good reflection on the maturity of Kubernetes and maturity of GKE as well. Because kind of what's happening, first wave of adoption was digital natives who really needed to move fast, to scale fast, kind of to grow their businesses. Next wave of adoption that's happening right now is that major regulated customers, big financial enterprises, big healthcare enterprises, and those companies have the same need for the speed. They need to redefine their businesses to stay competitive. And they're looking for Kubernetes and for GKE to solve it for them, but they need to have a flexibility where they solve it, in the cloud, on-prem, and making sure that we meet them where they are. So Ansys, as Kubernetes as well, and GKE is an immediate answer on our customer demands. Same kind of listening to our customers, driving co-innovation.
Right, and that's a core part of Kubernetes as a tenet of how it was built, right? You don't care about the underlying infrastructure. It runs the same no matter where it is. So with that being said, what else can you tell us about like what's coming up for GKE? Are there any cool announcements that we can look forward to in the next year or when GKE turns 10?
Having a 10-year-old slightly terrifies me. My son just went from 5 to 6 into 10. It's definitely a huge life change. So if we are going to look out, I'll use my crystal ball, right? And this is an unofficial roadmap prediction. So no commitments here, no contractual obligations, right? So even though it's being recorded.
No commitments.
I think what's going to end up happening is that Kubernetes is going to become much more adaptive, right? And what I mean by that, especially GKE, customers are going to want it to auto-scale really to exactly how their business reacts. They're going to want day two operations to be more and more managed to the point where it's almost like a tap. You've got capacity on demand, but you still want control. This isn't serverless. There's lots of great offerings like Cloud Run, but in a Kubernetes, you want to build a time to third-party ecosystem, not be locked in. So you're not just with one vendor, but they're going to expect more and more where the vendors themselves, like Google, do so much more optimization and learning for them. So it becomes simpler and simpler, but can handle the most complex workloads. So I think it won't put Alex and I out of a job, which is good. But I think on the ML side, a lot of the Google learnings, it'll be a lot heavier 5 years out to the point where it's just capacity on demand, but still able to tie into a lot of cool third-party tech. And if you want to move cloud vendors, you can. So you're not locked into the next mainframe.
And kind of for me, kind of it's important to remember about roots of Kubernetes and GKE. GKE and Kubernetes started from a Google's desire to bring same simplicity that Google developers have for developing at scale reliable services to everybody in the world. That's where our roots. And kind of we're on that journey. And we made a lot of progress, but still today, Borg continues to be kind of a crystal ball for us because Borg is still ahead. It's still easier for Google developer to develop at scale globally available service. And our goal is to bring that simplicity to everybody in the world. If you would ask me kind of what should customers expect? Simplicity. And that simplicity in all dimensions. It's in dimension of reliability, in the dimension of security, in the dimensions of day-to operations. Next is global availability and global scaling. As I mentioned, kind of today customers, major enterprises, they have thousands of applications. It's not just kind of one major application. It's a thousand applications, thousands of developers that want to use that platform. So scaling that in a simple way, it's not a trivial task, but kind of we're determined to solve it.
Word. And so we talked about so many cool features of GKE, so many reasons why people would want to use it, from small startups to, you know, large 15,000 node clusters. Are there any resources out there for someone that wanted to learn more about the new offerings in GKE or just hear more about Kubernetes in general?
Yeah, actually, in honor of the fifth birthday, we have a present for everyone. We've got a great free training program. We'll put it in the show notes in terms of the address there, because marketing will kill me that I can't remember the short Google link on it. But it's actually a lot of free Kubernetes training. I think the recommendation I can give to everyone listening is play with it. That's how I learned. That's how Alex learned. And the whole point of it, the training we have isn't GKE specific. It's designed just to help the Kubernetes community and get people skilled up on it. Because getting your hands dirty and trying it out is going to help architects, developers, and everyone. So check out the fifth birthday offering and the free training there, because it's a really good way to brush up your skills from the beginners all the way to a lot of the advanced operators.
Yeah, kind of, and to add to that, kind of Kubernetes podcast is kind of a really good source to stay on top of everything new that's happening in Kubernetes. And I also highly recommend to follow our best practices. We're pushing out a lot of best practices for reliable Kubernetes, for implementation at scale, for doing compliance in an easy way. So kind of all those resources are really good starting points for kind of really making it simple for your company.
And I think one last thing, we've got a cool video series coming up in Q4, and we'll definitely let the GCP podcast folks, so thanks, gents, know about this, but it's going to be by engineers sharing a lot of tidbits and what they've learned on Kubernetes and best practices. And that's like small bite-sized chunks that can help you out. So there'll be more announcements on that in Q4, but that should help the community out a lot too.
Yeah, so just like you said, we'll try to put as many show note links as we can for people who want those resources to learn Kubernetes, and then basically stay tuned, right? Because we're going to keep working on GKE, we're going to keep working on Kubernetes, and there's going to be a ton of content around that. Awesome. Well, Alex and Drew, thank you so much for coming in. We really appreciate the time, and we're super excited to see GKE turn 5, and then we'll have you back on when it turns 10.
Thanks a lot. Look forward to it. I'll see you in 5 years.
Thank you.
It's always exciting to hear more about, of course, GKE, but then I really love hearing about, like, you know, why people should use GKE. I think an important part is also that GKE, where that's appropriate and where Anthos is appropriate, helping make that distinction is fantastic.
I was super excited. I come from a gaming background. And so to hear all the work in the gaming area, I was like, yo, this is cool. This is really cool.
Maybe, you know what we should do? We should have Mark Mandel come back on to talk about Google Cloud Game Servers. I can't believe it took me this long to think of that.
I feel like you had to have said that every episode, no?
Well, we do pull in Robo Mandel quite a bit, but I feel like the real Mandel is the one who's going to do the explanation on Google Cloud Game Servers. All right, I'll make it happen. No promises, but I'll make it happen.
I've heard a few of the shows, so I think I know what's coming next.
Oh?
Is it the question of the week?
It is the question of the week. You nailed it. And this time, because, you know, again, Kubernetes themed, we're going to go ahead and turn it over to our friend Anthony Bouchon to give us a great tip on using GKE.
Thanks, Mark. Happy to be here as always. Now, there's a running joke in IT that when issues surface in an environment, upon some investigation, it's always DNS. Well, in GKE, there's something new that you can do to improve your experience with DNS. Today's tip is around Node Local DNS Cache, a new cluster add-on that improves the performance of DNS in Kubernetes, easily enabled in GKE clusters. Prior to Node Local DNS Cache, many users were relying solely on kubeDNS for service discovery in their clusters. kubeDNS is a critical cluster component in Kubernetes, handling DNS resolution for all Kubernetes pods that run cluster-first DNS policy. Now, out of the box, some Kubernetes users have seen some issues with this. One example is that kubeDNS runs as a Kubernetes deployment, which means that there's a chance that the workload pods issuing the most DNS queries could actually be located on nodes separate from where kubeDNS pods are running. This incurs additional latency for potentially critical DNS lookups. Node Local DNS Cache improves this performance by configuring a core DNS daemon set for DNS caching. With this caching agent on each node, every workload pod is able to issue DNS queries local to the node they are running on. Enabling Node Local DNS in GKE will also help for workloads that need to make external to the cluster queries by forwarding them to Google's Cloud DNS metadata server. All of this has multiple performance benefits: improved latency on DNS queries, sidestepping potential contract issues, and reducing the overall number of queries to the kubeDNS service. GKE has provided methods for getting this configured in both new and existing clusters, as long as they are version 1.15 or higher. It should be noted that updating an existing cluster with this add-on behaves similar to a cluster upgrade, with each node being replaced one by one. There will be links provided with this podcast containing additional information on how to configure Node Local DNS Cache in your GKE clusters. That's all I've got. Thanks for your attention today and wishing you well.
Thanks so much, Anthony. It's a great tip. And of course, you know, we are just about at the end of the episode. But before we wrap up, Carter, what cool things have you been working on? It's been a while.
Well, I don't know if you heard, but I'm doing a SaaS podcast with Google and Stephanie Roa.
Oh, yeah, I did hear about that. Oh, wow. Yeah, that was like 30 minutes ago.
It was. We do talk about Kubernetes on there sometimes, and even sometimes Anthos. So definitely check that out. And then also, I'm getting to work with this person. His name is Mark. He runs the GCP podcast, and we're working on a Kubernetes series. Have you heard about it?
Yeah, that Mark guy. He sounds smart. Wow, that sounds awesome. I can't believe it. No, it's going to be super exciting to get this launched. And of course, we've got a lot of work ahead of us, but we're really looking forward to getting that out there and letting people see it. So yes, be sure to stay tuned for that.
What's it about?
It starts with a K. It's on the tip of my tongue.
Don't tell me. Kangaroos, right?
I'm going to say Kubernetes is probably what it's about. That's it. It's going to be great, and we're really looking forward to that. And of course, don't forget to check out that SaaS podcast. Again, we'll have that link in the description for people.
Sounds about right.
Well, to all our listeners, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been an awesome time. And of course, we hope you stay safe out there.
Thanks for listening. One thing I love that no one can see is you have the best Superman curl right now.
Is it?
Yeah, it's like perfect.
It's been such a long time since I've had a haircut. It's been like 7 months or so. And so now I got this curly hair and everyone's like, that's an interesting style. And I'm like, interesting is the right word because I have no idea how to take care of long hair because I've always had short hair.